Ārē, dāng dō, dēshī, dā yū kīhē dī kōr mā dōs chēndē shū chā rē. Dā dīn mā shū yā dī yā, yē bō tī yā, dā dōs chēndē, gyū sūm dā dīn bī tō nē, sām dā wē nā, yā pēn yō dīn dī shū yā rē sē dī shū yā shū yā shā. Pēn yō.
So this morning then, we concluded to what we looked at, the eight causes that lead to these excellent fully ripened results. And these fully ripened results, through having them, one is able to accrue far more merit than one otherwise would be able to. Starting again with the text, the very top of page 141. If those eight causes, so that's what we looked at this morning, are conjoined with three conditions, their fully ripened effects will be outstanding. So now we come to a presentation of these three conditions, and we see the first is pure attitude, the second is pure application or performance, and the third is pure field. Both the first two have the divisions relating to oneself and to others. Just to reestablish the context, so this morning we looked at the eight causes that are, or we looked at the causes that are required for these eight fully ripened effects. And those causes, just to summarize them in brief, would be ethical restraint, generosity, patience, enthusiastic perseverance, humility, and some others such as rejoicing. And then when one accumulates these causes, one should also dedicate this merit so that when one experiences the ripening result, one utilizes this excellent state to be of great benefit to others. So we need to accumulate the causes and then dedicate the merit so that one will utilize these ripening results to be of tremendous benefit to others. Now, continuing, there are two kinds of pure attitude. Pure attitude related to oneself and pure attitude related to others. Each of these is two aspects. So looking at the first, the pure attitude related to oneself. The two aspects of pure attitude related to oneself are, firstly, to dedicate the virtues, the causes, to unsurpassed enlightenment without hoping for their maturation in samsara.
Yada dene ki yudruba ni yudrubi kewa nam sire deshi ma juge nemi yudrubiya ki yu kewa diki yudrubtanti kewa diki esu. An deso da yudrub chane nene lamye janshub du ngowa ni esu. Da semjia tamje ki dune sanye gobon tubi yudrubiwa shuwa sinu ngowa kya wore esu. Ngowa ni namba tamje mirwa, namba nami la mirwa wosu. Jesa dene ki kewa yudrubje kewa diki onga kewa chima nga diki yudinba shuwa. Devoted 然后你几步
So look at this first part in relation to the pure attitude related to oneself. And just to say the words at the end there, in samsara, this is the written translator added it just for clarity. It's not in the Tibetan. The meaning is fine. So what it comes down to is that one's motivation by which one accumulates the causes mentioned, as well as one's motivation in terms of one's dedication, is not so that one experiences excellent ripening results for oneself in one's future life. One is not engaging in these accumulations of virtuous causes so that in one's next life one can have a long and healthy life, that one can have material abundance, and that one can have influence over others. This is not the motivation with which one should be engaging in the accumulation of these causes, nor dedicating the merit. Because if one does so, all one is really hoping for is overcoming some kind of temporary problems and attaining some temporary pleasures. This is not the motivation of the Dharma. So the motivation and the dedication should be, through my ongoing spiritual development, may I be of greatest benefit to others. May I ease their suffering, both in a mundane or ordinary manner, but in particular, may I ease their suffering by guiding them how to attain their own enlightenment. So for this purpose, I accrue this merit, and I dedicate it. I dedicate it to the attainment of Buddhahood for all. So the sub-outline we're looking at is pure attitude related to oneself. So this expression oneself here means in relation to the merit that I accumulate, this is how I am going to dedicate it. So the attitude with which one dedicates the merit oneself has accumulated. So just to say, it's not that it is wrong to dedicate your merit to having a long life, good health, material abundance, prestige, and so forth. It's not that that's wrong, but rather that is not in accordance with the motivation that we have cultivated. It's not in accordance with our understanding of a precious human rebirth's particular potential. So we should rather be accruing virtue and dedicating it in accordance with what we have come to understand is a meaningful life, fulfilling the very potential of this life. So therefore, one dedicates to Buddhahood for all beings. And in this dedication, that is the explicit intent, and that is how it will eventually ripen. But there will be side effects of this dedication, this accumulation of merit under this motivation and its dedication. There will be side effects, such as having a long life, being healthy, being born into a prestigious family, being physically attractive, and so forth. So these will be desired side effects, but because of one's dedication, the merit will not be exhausted merely from that result, but will continue to help in one's attainment of Buddhahood. Then the second aspect relating to oneself, to accomplish these causes from the depths of one's heart with earnest sincerity. So the second point, as it says, to accomplish these causes, so it's pointing to the motivation. Yep, one shouldn't merely engage in virtue because it's what you've been told to do or what you've come to intellectually understand that you should do, but one should cultivate a motivation that is especially sincere and that is intense. So in this way, one's accumulation of causes, because of the power of that motivation, will be extensive. So one will engage in the same ethical or generous or patient act, but the merit that one accrues from that will be greatly amplified because of the quality of that of one's motivation, that one is doing so. One is, for example, being of benefit to others or refraining from harming others from the depths of one's heart. This is something one truly believes in and is doing so with full sincerity. In this way, extensive merits will be accumulated. So where we see pure attitude related to oneself, this refers to one's own motivation, one's own activity, and one's dedication. So this is the meaning of related to oneself. Now pure attitude related to others. The two aspects of pure attitude related to others are to give up jealousy, rivalry, and contempt when you see others practicing the Dharma at a higher, equal, or lower level than yourself, and to instead rejoice. And even if you're not capable of that, to think of it many times a day as the ideal way to act. So reading just the second half first of the sentence. When you see others practicing the Dharma at a higher, equal, or lower level than you, what this is referring to, so it should be expressed a little differently, is in relation to the motivation of one's fellow Dharma practitioners. If they have the supreme motivation of striving to develop bodhicitta, or if they have a middling motivation, in other words, they're striving for their own individual liberation, or if they have the initial level of motivation, which is striving for excellent rebirths, whatever level of motivation they have, do not, and you see them striving in virtue, do not be jealous towards them, do not be contemptuous towards them, have an attitude of competitiveness towards them. So this then is the meaning. So the terms higher, equal, or lower relate that to the three levels of motivation. And whatever virtuous activity a person is engaging in under the initial, intermediate, or supreme level of motivation, do not be either jealous of them or contemptuous towards them, or have a competitive attitude towards them. So therefore, towards others, refrain from being jealous or contemptuous or competitive. Rather, rejoice in the good that others do. Yeah, the context is particularly towards the Dharma activity, but of course we would relate it to anyone. Rejoice in the good that they are doing. Particularly, if one is coming from has a good attitude, valuing others, wanting them to be free from suffering and abide in happiness, then it's easy for a joyful attitude to arise when you see your fellow suffering beings striving in virtue. In this way, one comes to sincerely rejoice in the good that others are doing.
That's jowa dhapa sayate. Jowa dhapa la dhe, jowa dhapa tila rang la dhe pa ni ndhi rin wa dhanga. Madhu dhoba wa shi sar sa. Jedan jesu yiran, je madhu bina ya samtang jesu yiran, je gore sanpe, yana yandu len madhu dhoba yana yandu samtang gore sa. Tijin yele demi ki jesu yiran, je gore sa shirwa. Ta deda la manu ba yana dine yang si jesu je miri ban, je gore bi gimsan samtang yana yandu samtang je. Ta dhoba wa se yana yandu gimsan samtang je gore sanpe samtang je ba na, yana jesu yiran je tuya di yungre sa di shi sarwa da.
And then it concludes with, even if you are not capable of that, to think of it many times a day as an ideal way to act. Because if one is, it's all too easy to be competitive and certainly contemptuous towards others. So this will take time to turn around, this attitude to turn around. So when you notice it within yourself, recognize this is not ideal, and rather intentionally rejoice in the good deeds of others. And by doing so repeatedly, over time, one's natural inclination will be to rejoice in the virtue that others do. Then the second condition, pure application or performance. Pure application related to oneself consists in practicing virtue for a long time, continually and intensively. So application then is what application means, because it can also be translated as performance. So we're applying ourselves to the teachings we've received, or we are acting, putting into action the teachings we've received. So the practices that have been presented will be those such as ethics, generosity, patience, and so forth. So this second condition relates to not the attitude, that was the first. This is when one is actually cultivating these minds, living under the influence of these minds. One should do so in a way that is for a long time, continuous and intensive. So in other words, one should develop a deep habituation, not be sporadic, not to do so without a strength of mind, but to rather do so over a long time, continually and intensively. Early in the chapter, when we were looking at the 10 on virtues, we saw that practices have the four parts of the object, the intention, and the performance, and the completion. So we see some of this coming through here. So if we look at pure application related to oneself, and above, a pure attitude related to oneself. So in terms of the attitude, so this there will be the quality of the virtuous motivation. And there we see one develops an earnest intensity from the depths of one's heart. And to the extent that one develops such a motivation, then when it comes to the performance or the application, then one will be able to naturally engage in these virtuous practices of ethics, generosity, and patience and so forth for a long time, continually and intensively, because it is that motivation that will lead to one doing so. Moreover, when the act is concluded, so the completion is there, and one comes to dedicate, one's dedication also will reflect the motivation and the performance in that one will dedicate with earnest sincerity, one will dedicate from the depths of one's heart. In this presentation, this division into oneself and, maybe you could say towards oneself and towards others, means that towards oneself in terms of the attitude and application means one's own motivation one generates, the performance one oneself does, and then the dedication or completion of the activity, and then the dedication that one oneself does. So this is the meaning of this division into towards oneself, and then towards others is how we relate towards others. Often when we hear about a particular practice, we'll hear about not just the practice, but the motivation within which to do, and then we'll be guided in accordance with that motivation to dedicate in a particular way. So motivation, performance, and dedication. So in the first condition, that is the motivation. Here the second condition is the performance. And the dedication, the third step, is done in accordance with that initial motivation. So the performance is the actual practice. The way it's been presented here isn't in the usual order. The order is usually the order that one does something in: motivation, performance, dedication. But if we look up at the pure attitude related to oneself, the first point is dedication, so the third step. Then the second point is in relation to the motivation. The first point, so to dedicate the virtues, the causes, to surpass enlightenment. So it starts with dedication, and then immediately goes actually back to motivation, to accomplish these causes from the depth of one's heart with earnest sincerity. So that's the motivation. Now we've come to the performance of pure application related to oneself. So, but understanding the sequence, that is the actual sequence in which one would perform.
So
we've looked then at pure application related to oneself, and this then, as well as above, to pure application, pure attitude related to oneself. So there we've seen the motivation, the performance, and the dedication in relation to oneself. Now to conclude with looking at in relation to others, pure application related to others. Pure application related to others consists in bringing those who are not correctly cultivating virtue to do so, and praising those who are cultivating virtue so that they take delight in it, causing them to continue without interruption and preventing them from abandoning it. And the first part here, pure application related to others consists in bringing those who are not correctly cultivating virtue to do so. So this then refers to the generosity of giving dharma. So it may be something formal or it could be informal in how you talk to those you have a good relationship, those you have influence over, your friends and so forth. For example, by encouraging them to engage in generosity, maybe telling them about a donation you've made and how you feel so good about it and implying they should do something similar. Or maybe if they need help in helping someone, so being generous in terms of giving of themselves to help, then you will say, oh, I'll help you, and we can both help that person or that organization. In this way, encouraging them in virtue. And so too with ethics, talking about the importance to have a clear, determined attitude not to harm others. And the benefits of having such an attitude, of having that kind of impact on our world. So this and other illustrations also with patience, talking about what the meaning of patience is, how to be patient in adverse circumstances. So this is the generosity of giving Dharma, and it's encouraging others to engage in virtue. The first pure application related to others is to encourage or guide those who are not correctly cultivating virtue to do so. The second, praising those who are cultivating virtue so that they take delight in it. Where there are those who are engaging in virtue, stop, recognize that they are doing so, praise them, and thereby encourage them. Because by praising others who are engaging in virtue, if they are hesitant about doing so, perhaps they extending themselves beyond what's usually comfortable, you'll be giving them confidence, and thereby they're more likely to do so. Moreover, by you recognizing the virtuous activities that others are engaging in, you are showing that you value what they are doing. And this too will serve to encourage them to continue to engage in virtue and to turn what may be sporadic virtuous deeds into regular or consistent virtuous deeds.
And
the third, causing them to continue without interruption and preventing them from abandoning it. So sorry, just the third section within pure application related to others. So causing those who now are engaging in virtue to continue to do so without interruption and preventing them from abandoning it. So here, again, one is encouraging, one is guiding, so that others don't sit back on their laurels thinking, I've done enough, when they have the capacity to do more and there is the need for more to be done.
Summarize
these the first two conditions, that of pure attitude and pure application. So in relation to oneself, first one establishes a motivation, and the ideal motivation is bodhicitta to the extent that we can develop it. And trying, especially through repeated cultivation, so that it arises within us in a way that is sincere and from the very depths of our heart. And to the extent that we do develop a sincere and intense motivation, then when we engage in the application or the actual virtuous activity, cultivating a mind of ethics or generosity and so forth, then we will be able to, that motivation will, that the intensity and sincerity of our motivation will ensure that our application or performance is continuous and intensive. And then when it comes to dedicate, the strength of that motivation will continue through to our dedication. In that, we'll dedicate in accordance with our motivation to the fulfillment of the bodhisattva ideal, as well as with a sincerity and expressing this dedication from the depths of our heart. So that, in brief, is the pure attitude and application in relation to oneself. And then the way to relate to others is when one sees them engaging in virtue, to sincerely rejoice. And in particular, if one notices a negative attitude such as jealousy or competitiveness or contentment, looking down that they're only doing such an ordinary activity, guard against this, and rather generate a rejoicing based in the bodhicitta one cultivates in one's motivation, recognizing that suffering beings are creating the causes for happiness. Whether those causes are small or great, they are creating causes for happiness, and thereby generate great joy. And to the extent that one has influence, encourage others to engage in virtue, to continue to engage in virtue, and to take up new virtuous activities. And over the page is the third condition, pure field. I've just added a word. This is simply that both attitude and application are like an excellent field in that they produce plenty of good fruit. Reason then for this pure field is in reference to the incredible results that follow from following this guidance. If one does engage with a motivation or cultivate a motivation of bodhicitta, and in particular when one has some familiarity with that meditation, so that it arises from the depth of one's heart, that all one will do will be directed towards guiding others directly and indirectly to attain a state freed of suffering. Then with such a motivation, when its application in virtuous endeavors will be continuous and intense because of the quality of one's motivation. And then when one comes to dedicate, it will not just be a mere recitation of words, but the words that one recites will be expressed with sincere meaning. So these aspects together will ensure that extensive merit is accrued, or one would say that plenty of good fruit will ripen. And plenty of good fruit refers to the varied ways the powerful virtue that is accumulated will ripen. Because whilst it's dedicated to Buddhahood for all, it will indirectly ensure that you attain excellent rebirths, and that you will also eventually attain your own liberation from suffering, but not leave it at that. You will continue to become a Buddha so that you can be of the greatest benefit to others, and you will, all beings will too also become Buddhas, because that is the final goal to which all your merit is dedicated. This then is the meaning of a pure field.
Now, onirwa dinade dinade sungna dele dine memba je dangbo korone ya ane ngwa di ma sung ane ne kunwa di ma sung dine ka sa ngwe shi jo nyamne che di sungne di sungwa ni sungna di di sungwa di ndi de du gyusum se de gyusum jumna ane geopulu che ba jungure se be gi Shung Shenda Chinada Sung Shai Yu Sarwa, Ndi Shung Na Sung Ba Daga Na Chi Digi Ma Chi Shai Kyab Chi Jirmi Sung Hai Zang, Shung Shenda Na Sung Hai Di Nala, Ani Dangbo Ngo Wa Di Sung Dini, Ani Kung Ngo Dini Ba Jowa Di Dini Sung Di Yu Sarwa. Dadi Di, Da Sung Hai Cik Tuwa, Digi Shung Chi Nala Sung Yu Re, Spechi Chi Na Dangi Chi Di, Spechi Di Gar, Pin Pa Pa Tome Ki Sung Yu Na Dini, Spechi Chi Nala, Shung Chi Nala, Gyu Sung Yu Kwa Di Shai Sung Yu Sarwa. Dinala Carson, Dambo Moadi, Sun, Dine Kunwa, Dine, and Joa Dike, and Dusio Sara, Dina Shimba, Koronshun, Dina, Suma Najimba, and Masun Share, Madame, and Janati Korim Chu, Sunga, Yumse, Shanda, Yuma, Dinishi Sudua, Chisa, then when they send a Kunwa Tambo, say, Dine, giving him the Joe, when it was she, Dine Tama, Moa, Jadi, Sunya, Korim Jenitiro Sira, and Dina, that Dina Sunya, Korim Dambo Moad, Sun, Dine Kunwa, Dine Tama, Joa, the Sunya. 제단 디 딘송 고베 김제 가르스네 디 규숨 규숨나 된 된 넘버 미버 풀루 중앙 중국에 세디 슝치 나라 송대요 데 슝치 니기 단다 마시 고데 제단 슝디 나라 송에들 담보다 뭐아디 뭐르 예르 송 디네 디나 가서 군노데 디네 마 응어시 좋아 냠네 제 송대요로 디 나신 제네 고르 슝 고 제 제시 슝디 나네 여바나 시자지 디 나신 제 마 송하러 와데 디네 디사레
These three conditions, then, are a unusual ordering of a presentation we are quite used to. So what we're used to is more the order that is presented in the great text by a master such as the Sangha, where first the motivation is presented, then the performance and or the actual activity, and then the dedication. Yeah, because it's been Lama Tsongkhapa himself, has presented it in a slightly different way to bring the motivation and the dedication together in the pure attitude and then separating the middle part, the performance, into the pure application or pure performance. But the meaning is the same as what you will have heard in the other context, in other contexts and in the normal sequence. The meaning is the same. But here, in that it relates to the preceding eight causes to bring about eight excellent results. This is how those eight excellent causes can be amplified in terms of their ripening effect.
Lenje samne chudo cheba si dang du kisin yimane ya chi lere chi samba dan jerado samba ane an chudo che su se sungo ra de sumba chudo che su che dan gevele ta mige vele se tin tin re di gi tebu ane ne mi de bu tin tin de yungre se de ngaju du sin de da ne mi tin yungre se da du sin de shi ro da ju ban za da ane lede de nyamso lengo ra de chudo cheba se di da ju gi mige vele ka so Jubasine Givi Ledike, Yamlin Chiada, Doba said the Migi Legi Pa Doba, Pa Kayadik sometimes. She said that Yamlin Chiad is Sungor Chuto Chisus.
So now we come to near the top of page 142, another major outline. So we've looked at a general presentation of karma thus far, an overview of the presentation on karma, looking at virtuous and non-virtuous karma, looking at how karma is magnified, as well as the karmic ripening results. So now we come to look in more detail at a presentation on what is beneficial and how to turn away from, or how to engage in what is beneficial and how to turn away from what is harmful. So first, we'll have a general presentation. Thereafter comes to a presentation on how to purify non-virtue by means of the four opponent powers.
And now, di sungdwa dine junju na liya junju les mige wale mige mige wale dunga chung ndele chitar nge thar shi nyinsen da to da gi ni din yi ba shi san ba ri she dang ngs ge wi cho ni tam ji yi za wa me ba tu bi me ba tu bi sung ni yang za wa da do ni ne min ji bu gong bie suo xie sung ba dar ras.
It starts with, a general presentation starts with Lama Tsongkhapa quoting from two verses from Shantideva's engaging the or entering the Bodhisattva way. You've just made a change in the second line. Suffering arises from non-virtue. How can I definitely gain liberation from it? It is appropriate day and night always to contemplate nothing but this. The sage taught that resolute faith is the root of all virtues, and the root of that is to meditate continuously on fully ripened effects. Suffering arises from non-virtue. As we saw earlier, when looking at non-virtuous karma, when non-virtuous karma ripens, it ripens in suffering, and in particular, when it ripens, its fully ripened effect was propelling karma, it results in rebirth in the suffering lower realms. Suffering arises from non-virtue. So both suffering experiences in a rebirth, as well as the being reborn in the lower realms. This comes from non-virtuous karma. Depending on the strength of that ripening karmic imprint, determines on which lower realm one is born in, whether it's as an animal, a spirit, or in the hell realms. When we looked at the 10 non-virtues, as well as thereafter on propelling karma, we saw that the strength of the karmic imprint that ripens as propelling karma a death, the strength of that will determine where we are born. And if it's non-virtuous and it's powerful, one will be born in the hell realms. If it's of middling strength, one will be reborn as a spirit. And if it is of lesser strength or slight strength, that negative imprint will lead to rebirth as an animal. And born in these realms, one suffers in ways that are largely unimaginable to most humans. This then leads to the second line. How can I definitely gain liberation from it? Well, the way it's translated is fine too. But how can I definitely gain liberation from it? In other words, how can I close the door to the possibility of being reborn in the lower realms? So this question will arise independent on the meditation on karma, particularly the non-virtuous karma that can lead to rebirth in the suffering lower realms, which was the previous chapter that, or a previous chapter that was looked at. So this, having meditated well on these various topics, will lead to an intensity of mind. How can I prevent the possibility of falling into the lower realms? This then comes to the third and fourth line. It is appropriate day and night always to contemplate nothing but this. So this then, thinking about how one can gain freedom from such a rebirth, is something that should be a single concern for us, something that should occupy our minds, ensuring that we have the strength of mindfulness to be aware of our mind at all times, and thereby to protect ourselves from occurring non-virtue, and to ensure our mind is at all times virtuous. But to have such a strength of mind, to be so mindful, so aware of one's way of thinking, requires this meditation.
Mani ngason le kene de pe sa sa re sembe da deni gi semlia tele de ta gu do sembe shu chenbo chi deni gi le yo de ngo de ran xin ju ko a da di be che de di be che ba ne mani ke gu re sembe ki sam ta chi nge ba shu ni yo de an di be che de ran xin ga ru ko da di be zao gi ji me sembe sam da deni gi an di do sho le ge wa kang tu de ji ju ye de da sam no de le tu ge ra che sa 南宋也刚刚的捐修通的密度把这些的来他这个什么修清不见的然后现在地方的这些高高这些马来什么地方下呀地方该马街怎么样了说吧今天地方说给我这些的然后修不修给你这些的捐到货的捷什么差过了吧
The attitude described here has yet to arise. This then shows one needs to meditate more on this, particularly if it has not yet arisen in a way that is lasting and sustained. Then you know you need to meditate more on cause and effect, because it's through meditating on cause and effect again and again, as well as the what was looked at previously in the suffering of the lower realms, that determined attitude will arise. I have to ensure I gain liberation from the possibility of falling to the lower realms. This has to happen. And this intensity of mind will give one will give you the focus required to always be aware of what one's mind is doing. This will come from the generated repulsion towards non-virtue. The very idea of engaging in something non-virtuous will repulse you because you know it doesn't come without consequence. Likewise, you will have given rise to an eager embrace of virtue. So these two minds will have arisen and give you the strength of mind to be mindful of your mental process and thereby ensure that one is engaging in virtue and not in a way that, we're doing it because I'm supposed to do it, but one does it with delight, with enthusiasm. And then when opportunities to engage in non-virtue come, one will readily refrain from that. It will be easy to refrain from non-virtue because of this repulsion towards it that you've cultivated by meditating well on cause and effect. With meditation, it needs to be done in a way that's personal and specific to your lived experience, not merely a repetition of what one has read or heard. So, for example, in this context here, imagine oneself experiencing the karmic ripening result in the lower realms of non-virtue that you know you've performed. So you recall a non-virtuous deed, and then you meditate on what it would be like you yourself now having died and being reborn in one of those suffering realms, imagining oneself experiencing the intense suffering which was the result of some misdeed that one has done. This then will lead to a deep impact on the mind and an ease with which one will turn away from non-virtue and embrace virtue. The lived experience of those now suffering in the spirit realm or the hell realms, this is not something we can observe. If you have a deep faith in the existence of these realms, include them in your meditation. If you have some doubt because it's something that only the text present, then that's okay. Don't include them in your meditation for now. Just meditate on the lived experience of animals, which we can experience. In particular, don't allow yourself to fall for seeing their cuteness, but recognize what their lived experience actually is like, how they do not have much in the way of support. Strangers, like in the human realm, there's a lot of support. Animals do not have this. And they are, moreover, a constant threat of danger, constant threat of being captured and eaten alive. And therefore, they are always nervous, apprehensive, because of the constant threat of danger. Reflect on this and reflect, what if it was me? What if this was my last meditation, my death were to be imminent, and what were to ripen was a negative, a non-virtuous karmic imprint, and that is the realm I was born in. And experience the what it would, or meditate on what it would be like to arise as an animal. And in this way, by doing these meditations again and again, you'll give rise to that determined attitude, I do not want this to happen. And this is imperative, because it's all too easy to be drawn to other practices, such as meditating on emptiness or bodhicitta, and whilst these are excellent to do, to really give rise to these higher qualities, one has to have given rise to the foundational qualities. Because what the meditations in the training of a being of initial capacity, what they lead to is a turning away of things that in the greatest as expanse of time have no real meaning. We turn away from the events of this life, the troubles that plague us and our world, and the various pleasures that dominate our minds. So we see them for what they are, as fleeting and having no value. And rather, we have a focused attitude, in this case, a focused attitude on what causes am I creating, and have an attitude towards purifying, cultivating an ever stronger virtuous motivation, and a genuine virtuous motivation. So this is how, right now, one turns towards the Dharma and away from all the other things that are just distraction. Then later, as we progress through the text, we come to the trainings where we start to look at the lived experience of humans, later then in terms of, so give rise to definite emergence, then bodhicitta much later on emptiness. because of the focused mind that you can develop right now through this, through applying yourself in what we're looking here, those later realizations can come to you in this life. Those later realizations can come to you because what is primarily holding one back is the strength of mind, the focus at all times on these various topics of the Dharma. And this is how we cultivate that focused attitude. To aid the cultivation, Lama Tsongkhapa quoted the second verse from Entering the Bodhisattva Way. The sage taught that resolute faith is the root of all virtues, and the root of that is to meditate continuously on fully ripened effects. Look, in the first two lines, the sage taught that resolute faith is the root of all virtues. So this word translated as resolute faith can be translated in many ways. This is correct, but depending on what works for you, a deep aspiration, a heartfelt belief. So this is what the Buddha taught is the root of all virtues. So whatever virtuous endeavor one is engaging in, one needs to have a deep aspiration to cultivate it, or a deep belief in the benefits of cultivating it, or resolute faith in that virtuous quality. This is the root of all virtues.
And the answer to the question is, Mepa di is giving Nyamlin Che, Dumba, and Mepa Che, the answer to the question is,
So when we hear the Buddha taught that resolute faith is the root of all virtues, because we all have faith in the Buddha, we will want to give rise to resolute faith. How to do so? And Shantideva presents it in the next two lines. And the root of that, so in how to give rise to resolute faith, is to meditate continuously on fully ripened effects. In other words, on the presentation on karma, on cause and effect. Because it's through understanding that everything we experience is a ripening result. Our own lived experience, this world we live in, this has come from causes that have been created. And if we think of the person we want to be, the kind of world we want to live in, this comes from causes. Thinking about this again and again, recognizing where we are as a result of causes, and thereby understanding that what we'd rather have, where we'd rather be, that too is a result of causes. This gives rise to a confident faith or a resolute faith in the presentation on cause and effect. recognizing that merely hoping for something or not liking something or wanting something else isn't going to bring change. Causes need to be cultivated. And the quality of the cause is what determines the quality of that result. That one doesn't merely need to turn away from non-virtue and embrace virtue. One needs to do so wholeheartedly, with one's full attention, with one's very being. One needs to abandon non-virtue with a sense of repulsion and embrace wholeheartedly virtue. But for that to come about, to live that life, to be that kind of person, requires meditating continuously on cause and effect. When we come across the term here, meditate, the type of meditation that is almost always referred to is analytical meditation. Or to use just everyday language, it's thinking, but thinking based on reasons, not the mind wandering all over the show, but thinking based on reasons. Coming to understand a particular topic, and then thinking about that in a detailed manner. So in terms on the presentation on karma, read and reread the text, paragraph by paragraph. Read the notes you have on that, paragraph by paragraph. And as you read, keep pausing and reflecting on what you are reading, and do so in a personal manner, in relation to oneself, one's own lived experience. In this way, one keeps reading the same parts again and again, making them the meaning clear and vivid to oneself. By comparing what kind of life we can expect based upon the actions of this life up to this point, we will gain a determined motivation to improve, to change the trajectory of our future lives by taking hold of the Dharma now, embracing it within us, recognizing that this is what will lead to a transformation of our lives to come. In this way, we'll give rise to a resolute faith in the presentation on karma. We will naturally aspire to virtue. Because what we are trying to give rise to here in this presentation is not just an intellectual understanding, but a deep determination to embrace virtue and to abandon non-virtue. And when these meditations are done repeatedly over a sustained period, that will be the natural expression of who you are. To act in a harmful manner, to speak in a harmful manner, to think in a harmful manner. You'll feel an aversion towards that. It won't feel like who you want to be. Whereas being a generous person, a kind person, a loving person, this will be a more genuine reflection of who you are becoming. So therefore, this meditation on cause and effect, doing so in the way described, is indispensable.
And that in my share some batars, Nemin Jevo Combo said, and that share some batars, Carnage, Lady, Shepherd, Chene, Yanda, Yando, Combo, Chedes. Sanda, Carbi, Lay, Sidan, and Duke, Kavi, Lady, Roa, Kavai, Kaval Sabal, attended Lejevo, Lejevo, Lejevo Sabana, Jevo, Mondio Coman, Top Mondio Coman, Tendelia, Dijonia, the name Kaval Sabal, Tene, Tarbi Coman Toyata, Tamji Kimbo Cotoba, Lucine, Ne Kaval Sabal, Tene, Yungo, Esebigda, Carbi, Leda. Then, Lede Shepard Chene, two Shepard, Simjuce, Hakova, Shepard Chene, Yana Yando combat, yes, and then Lende, the Hakova, Tami, Jim Mariana, Yana, some Matavena, Chi Odiris, Tarja Hakone, Chi, and then never Timmy to Marit, Yana Yando some Tambor, yes, Yana Yando some Tavena, then some of the Shu Church in it, and giving him the Shu Cheda, and no more.
Then Lama Tsongkhapa continues. So once you have come to understand virtuous and unvirtuous actions and their effects, you should meditate on this over and over again. So this here, this sentence, is something that you have heard so many times. Gather knowledge and integrate it. And the way to integrate it is through this process of repetition, meditating on the same topic again and again, so that it becomes integrated within you, becomes part of who you are. And the sign of gaining success in this particular meditation is that when your faith arises, in the sense that your mind becomes so accustomed to contemplating on karma, that all that arises for you, you will relate to through the lens of this understanding. Everything that you experience, you will recognize this is coming about in dependence on causes. And that understanding will shift you ever more towards embracing virtue and abandoning non-virtue. This will come through when you understand that it's virtuous causes that will lead to liberation. And what are those virtuous causes? And in fact, those virtuous causes can lead to enlightenment too, independence on the right motivation. And it's only non-virtuous causes that keep me bound in suffering and prevent me from fulfilling my potential. So by thinking in these ways again and again, so that you start to experience all that, so that everything that you experience, you relate to through the lens of karma, then you are giving rise to resolute faith. Then Lama Tsongkhapa presents reasoning why it's imperative that we meditate on this topic again and again, because it is extremely difficult to gain certainty about it, since it is very hidden. So phenomena are of three types. There are those which we can be known manifestly, the things that we see and hear and taste and so forth. There are things that are hidden, but can come to be known by ordinary beings through reasoning. And there are those which are very, very hidden or extremely hidden, which for ordinary beings cannot be known. And the deeper presentation on karma is very hidden. It cannot be known by ordinary beings. We can only come to an understanding, independence, on our faith or trust in the Buddha, and thereby in dependence on the Buddha's teachings. And this is because, so on a coarser level, in terms of cause and effect, we can come to an understanding. But in terms of a deeper level, what is the particular cause for that result, that we can only come to know independence on our faith in the Buddha and the Buddha's teachings. And there are many topics that are either hidden or and some which are very hidden. But there are some topics that for us as ordinary beings right now and for some time will remain very hidden, but eventually will become only hidden. In other words, we can eventually come to know. So for example, the only realms we can really point to with certainty that are manifest to us are the human and animal realms. The other realms for us are hidden. But by cultivating our minds, developing knowledge, through reasoning, we can come to recognize that there are other realms, the realms of spirits and hell beings, as well as the realms of gods. So these can come to be known. But other presentations, such as that on the subtleties of karma, this is something only Buddhas will know. So therefore, to gain certainty of this presentation is difficult and requires extensive
meditation.
The meaning then in brief is independence on meditating, using analytical meditation again and again, so using reasoning and our own lived experience on the teachings of the Buddha on this topic of karma, eventually resolute faith in this presentation will come. And this will be experienced by us as, firstly, how we are experiencing things. We'll recognize that this is coming about independence on causes that have been created. But more importantly, from that, we will come to, with ease, turn away from what is non-virtuous. We'll have a revulsion to what we understand as non-virtuous. And equally, we'll have an eagerness, an embracing of what is virtuous. And we'll see that there is nothing more important than this, abandoning what is non-virtuous and embracing what is virtuous. And in this way, we'll readily let go of all the things that consume us so, but that actually have no real value.
Then 지구의 개와치마야고야다
So let's summarize, and this will be a little while until we come together again. So what I encourage you to meditate on is what we covered here this weekend, and to do so repeatedly over a sustained period in the way that has been presented. Because what has been presented here is the very causes that are required in order to ensure that one eventually becomes a Buddha. And not only eventually becomes a Buddha, but in that journey, one will also gain complete freedom from suffering entirely. And in fact, long before that, one will receive many excellent rebirths, excellent rebirth after excellent rebirth. In all of this, as has been presented again this weekend, comes about independence on accumulating virtue, and abandoning non-virtue. These are the causes that lead to those desired results. And we saw in particular today the need to cultivate first the required motivation. And here the motivation to cultivate is a genuine wish to be of benefit to others and to refrain from harming them in any way. So refraining from harming them in terms of our physical or verbal activities, and even refraining our mind from going in a harmful direction. But in terms of benefiting others, we have as our desired goal to benefit others in the most meaningful of ways, to guide them in every way possible to become Buddhas themselves. But in order to be able to do that, we also commit to helping others to ease their suffering and be of benefit to them in temporary ways, because helping in ways which may seem insignificant, but with this motivation of wanting thereby to eventually lead them to Buddhahood, this becomes an incredibly powerful virtuous act. So cultivate this motivation of wanting to benefit others in the most meaningful of ways, and the determination not to cause harm. Then engage in, that's the motivation, then the actual performance or the actual practice. And here there are a number of meditations. You can meditate on each briefly or focus on one or two. So you can meditate on generosity. And we heard in the earlier presentation on the causes for those eight excellent results, how generosity is pervasive throughout many of them. There's material generosity, there's the generosity of giving of fearlessness, and the generosity of giving of the Dharma. So cultivate these within you. Imagine in the ways that you've been taught over these years, the various ways to meditate on generosity, to give of oneself in any way in accordance with one's capacity, and where one's capacity is limited, to have the genuine aspiration for one's capacity to grow and develop. Thereafter, one can meditate on ethics, the determined attitude not to harm others, to recognizing that responding in harm is never appropriate, and develop this determined attitude, thinking of events in one's life, past, as well as what one will face, how best to respond in an ethical manner, how to ensure that no matter what one encounters, one does not cause harm. And likewise, and thereafter, one can meditate on love and compassion, which is an excellent foundation to meditate on patience, the determined attitude not to cause harm. For one's mind not to be disturbed in the face of adversity. So this attitude of patience is greatly aided by ethics, the wish not to harm others, and generosity, the wish to be of benefit to others, as well as by love and compassion, valuing others, wanting them to be happy. And if one also meditates on enthusiastic perseverance, taking delight in what one is doing, taking pleasure in this. And then there were additional practices mentioned. Particularly, I want to remind you of rejoicing. Rejoicing in the good that others do. And here I encourage you to think of actual instances from people that you know, or that you know directly, or perhaps through media, of good that others are doing in this world. And thereby, guard your mind of looking down on others, thinking, oh, that's a minor thing they are doing, or of being competitive of others or jealous of others. Generate this good quality of delighting in the virtue that others are engaging in. And then finally, dedicate. And the dedication should be an expression of one's motivation. And where it is, then you should see that one's motivation isn't just cultivated at the beginning, but it's kept alive and present throughout the performance, the main body of the meditation, and then it's expressed again in dedication. Dedicate this merit so that all beings gain complete freedom from suffering and attain complete Buddhahood. Then thank you. We can conclude therefore for this weekend. Thank you very much.
So dedications are on page 8.
Okay, look. Yeah. Do you have time? Take your question? Yeah.
I'm interested in the hidden phenomena of Dharma. And if we relate that to people who have no background in Dharma, how do we refer to it? Perhaps we can only say it is said in Buddha Dharma. Because
it's not
down to us. Now other people
may ask us
questions.
So this is the extremely hidden things that we can't come to know through logical reason, yeah?
And we are operating on faith ourselves. Yeah. Then how do we relate that to others who have no such practice?
Sure, sure.
Thank you.
As you say, the way to reply needs to be in accordance with this person. So quoting to them sayings of the Buddha, this isn't going to be appropriate for such a person. So rather, try to give examples that they can relate to. So in terms of a very hidden phenomenon, we'll take that of karma, the current topic. So if someone says, is looking for explanation of karma, then you talk about a cause and effect from the mental approach and mental causes and mental results, or results that are experienced mentally, from a one life perspective. Because this is something then anyone can relate to. So you can give an illustration of if you have some leftover food and you give it to a hungry dog. And you do that with a joyous mind, happy to be helping this dog, so you have a good motivation. You will experience far more happiness yourself from the delight the dog takes in what it's taking. Whereas if you just discard the food with no real particular mental engagement, the dog's just as happy, the hungry dog is just as happy, but the result that comes back to you isn't quite the same, because you're not taking so much pleasure in easing the suffering of another being. So here, you relating. So normally when we talk about karma, we're talking about causes created now leading to future lives. This won't work with such a person, like you rightly said. So talk about your own mental attitude and the way you will experience pleasure from engaging in virtue. Then this is something that they can relate to.